to GonkCast, an Autechr podcast. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this is yet another bonus episode about your emails. Plus, we'll spend some time discussing Autechr's 2017 12-inch single, JNSN code GL16/SPL47. Rolls right off the tongue. I've got to apologize once again for taking so long to respond to so many of your great emails. As I've said before, I read them all right away, and we always look forward to discussing them on air. But I also like to respond and say thank you to everybody, and I often let the backlog get overwhelmingly large. So please know how much we appreciate hearing your thoughts and how much better they make all of our episodes. Seriously, thanks so much for writing in, and do keep it up. Indeed, our next episode will be on the first two NTS sessions, but we want to start collecting opinions, interpretations, and hot takes on all four installments now. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. Again, we want to know what you think about NTS sessions 1-4. Our email address is in the show notes of every episode, and it's GonkCastPod@gmail.com. All right, Dan, what background info do we need to know about JNSN code GL16/SPL47?
All right. Touched Music is a nonprofit UK label that specializes in electronic and ambient music. Their proceeds go to a variety of causes, but they seem to have a special relationship with Macmillan Cancer Support. Back in 2014, Autechr contributed the track SPL47 to the second Touch compilation, which, by the way, has 254 tracks. and in 2016, they contributed JNSN code GL16. To the third compilation, which is even longer at 417 tracks. Then in 2017, Touch decided to bring these two tracks together for a 12-inch single limited to 1,000 copies. It's also available on streaming, but it's still overlooked by a lot of fans. It's only got 200 ratings on Rate Your Music, and it's currently sitting at a fairly unimpressive 3.18.
Yeah, I wonder if you had, you know, spent much time with this before and what you think of it.
I didn't know that they were from like a compilation. I remember when this got like released, it sort of came out of nowhere, and you know, I downloaded it and checked it out, you know, listened to it a few times, but you know, it just sort of was always one of those little extra things that I've never, you know, that's not like I'm listening to this all the time or anything.
Yeah, I feel like I maybe listened to it once or twice when it first came out, and didn't think much of it since then. But, you know, it was really cool to revisit in the middle of our like incredibly deep dive into Autechr, because, you know, I would say that these are two pretty interesting tracks. And I would particularly say that the first track is quite fascinating. I mean, it's kind of like the lush, like the super lush synths that pop up on LSEC sometimes, and on XI sometimes, but like kind of stuttering in this bouncy way and kind of forming this sort of circular melody. And then what do you know, these like big, glorious, like dreamy amber style, you know, pads kind of fill out the whole space and almost like slowly take over the track. And there's like a weird little coda with this kind of like warbly metallic clanging or something. But I mean, it's interesting because we talked about, oh my God, I'm going to forget the name now, Siptixt or something, like in our last listener email episode, which was also sort of a 2014 era outtake released on a Bleep compilation. And that was also like kind of strikingly pretty and melodic. And like listening to this one in particular, I was thinking like, are they just, you know, kind of like saving all of the pretty stuff at this time in their career?
I mean, that's possible, you know, maybe they didn't think it fit on records, but, you know, liked it enough to stick it on these comps. Also, you know, maybe it's stuff that was made earlier that they've, you know, tweaked more, you know, or something. It's hard to say, and, you know, we'll probably never know the answer. But yeah, it is sort of strange, you know, maybe happy coincidence or whatever, but that these like two, you know, pretty tracks ended up on compilations.
Yeah, and on that note, you know, I did kind of think a little bit about Oversteps when listening to this track in particular, which, you know, is obviously quite a few years before this one, which was on the 2016 compilation. But it does have that kind of like prettiness and, you know, sort of a using melodic pieces to create sort of like a kind of a chill, you know, rhythm. But it's just not very rhythmic in general. It's more of like a pretty melodic kind of piece in an Oversteps fashion. The other track, SPL47, I mean, it's got an obvious like relationship to SPL9 from XI, right? Does that one strike you as like pretty different from the first track and more XI-ish?
Yeah, it's definitely more XI-ish. You know, it's less pretty, more, you know, glitchy and kind of out there and stuff. It's okay. I think the first track is more interesting and enjoyable. This one just sort of seems like a, you know, like it, this one seems like an outtake or a throwaway kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree. And it's weird because it's, I mean, it's not like a ton of ratings on Radio Music, but it is rated higher at a 3.7 over 3.4, which is what the first track is on Radio Music. But it's, yeah, this one seems more like a throwaway. I mean, I think you can like kind of hear the DNA of SPL9, but that one is like much noisier and much more metallic and like kind of goes off the rails into like pretty pure noise territory at points. And this one kind of stays like in this, I don't know, it's almost got like a foot stomping quality to it. I mean, it's got like a lot of nice energy and yeah, kind of like a, like these clipped glitches that form this kind of propulsive beat. But there's like just this weird kind of, I don't know, bubbling and gurgling to it. It really sounds like if you took that really noisy SPL9 from XI and you kind of just, I don't know, dunked it underwater or something like that. But it just kind of like goes and then stops and it just feels like one little idea that was on the cutting room floor compared to the first track, which I think is really quite striking and to me feels like a hidden gem.
Yeah, I would agree that the second track like really has that cutting room floor quality. Like you say, it just sort of like happens, you know, it doesn't seem like 100%, you know, fully like fledged out or anything, you know, like maybe SPL9 yeah. like is the fully fledged, you know, version or whatever. But yeah, the first track definitely much more interesting in the sense that, you know, it doesn't sound like a leftover from any, you know, particular record from the area or anything. I mean, like you said, it sort of has like those hints of Amber and hints of LSEC and everything. It's I think it's interesting in that sense, if nothing else, you know.
Yeah, and you know, so trying to place them, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like, I don't know, thinking about it, it's almost like SPL9 is the one track on XI that is like the biggest hint at AE Live and LSEC, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the noisiest and the glitchiest and everything. And this kind of like tones down SPL9, which is interesting. So maybe, you know, I want to say it's got to be from the XI era and, you know, JNSN does feel a little later, just in the sense of like, you know, even though it does have that oversteps quality, maybe it's like a little bit of the LSEC approach, especially like the way that it's not using a lot of reverb in the beginning. It's more of like these kind of strange, like kind of clanging, stuttering noises that are quite dry, but it all kind of comes together into something very like lush and dreamy, kind of like Easter off LSEC. But I mean, so the larger point is like, it doesn't feel like these tracks belong together to me, but, and I know it's not fair to judge them as like a single release because they were never meant to be, but do you think this works at all as like a single release?
You know, I think it's nice to have like these two things accessible, you know, since, yeah. You know, like you said, I don't think they were ever meant to like be judged together or anything. You know, I'm sure it was basically just a, you know, fundraising attempt for these charities. And I think, you know, it's a good thing if they were just thrown on these compilations, especially since they have, you know, 200 something and 400 something tracks, like they're gonna get lost like completely, right. You know, I don't know who else is even on there. Maybe, you know, somebody good, but you know, this way they're at least like not lost, you know, maybe some charities, you know, made a little bit of money.
So I
think it's like a nice, I mean, any time, like any sort of compilation release or anything, it's going to just be for like the bigger fan anyways. So I think it's like nice to make it just a little easier for the, you know, the bigger fan that wants to hear them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think it's worth seeking out. You know, I feel like maybe a lot of people don't know that it is so easily accessible. It's just on streaming. So it's like totally, you know, worth your time to just sort of give it a listen. I feel like I said, the first track, JNSN Code, is really fascinating. I mean, I thought that Siptic's track we talked about last time was really fascinating. And I kind of hope that they, you know, of course, every Autechre fan dreams this, but like, they need to put out some compilation of all the Lucys, you know, over the course of their career, like a you know, a complement to the EP's box set. And while they're at it, they could go ahead and expand that EP's box set to include everything that's come out since then. But you know what I mean? Then maybe like people might, like their ears might perk up and they'd be like, oh, actually JNSN is really, really cool.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely need to do something like that because they really do have like so much cool stuff, you know, that we've discovered. And even, I mean, there's been a few things that we had never even heard before or, you know, hadn't heard yeah. of even. And I just think that like, you know, a compilation like that would be, you know, really, really great. I mean, like you said, even if just reissuing that EP's box set, but, you know, expanded to it to include all, or, you know, or a part two or, you know, was the Beatles Past Masters kind of set, you know, that's what we need.
Yeah. And then I do think some of these, like there are some of these tracks we've talked about that like, you know, they're just sort of meant to be like kind of hidden little things. But some of these I think would really shine if given like a proper spotlight in that way. And I feel like JNSN is one of those. But all right, let's move on to the emails of this week. First, I just want to read this neat story from listener Alex, who writes, in 2016, I quit my job in New York City and drove around the country for 2 months, mostly by myself, sleeping in a hammock, a tent, or my car, listening to basically nothing but Joanna Newsom and Autechre. I had this plan to disobey all the rules at the Grand Canyon, saying you shouldn't climb to the canyon floor and back in a single day, which probably would have killed me if I'd tried, but the day I had scheduled for it, the whole canyon was rained out and full of eerie, otherworldly fog. So instead, I drove around the rim for the whole day and just blasted LSEC while staring into the gray emptiness of the canyon. I was in a weird place mentally in tracks like C16 Deep Tread, Curve Caton, and especially Pendula HV Moda, where the soundtrack to feeling like I was on an alien world. That's just so vividly written. I can like totally imagine LSEC, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty cool, you know. I mean, I've never seen the Grand Canyon in person, but you know, it seems like it looks like Mars, which I guess I've never seen Mars in person either, so.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, I feel like we've mentioned this before, but it's just like it's such a shame about doing this podcast during lockdown, you know, because there are those like weird moments where you just happen to be in a weird place listening mm-hmm. to something yeah. and then it kind of like associates with it forever and we're kind of missing out on that. But all right, what's next?
All right, listener Steve shared some thoughts on LSEC 5. Specifically, he praised every track, saying that they could all work as the score for a movie. They each create a certain mood and they blend into the background. He also said that he likes One Ohm, but it's underwhelming as the closing piece for such a large work. If you consider all of LSEC 5 to be the closer, it feels more appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, we both felt like One Ohm or One Ohm was a pretty incredible closer to this whole thing. I mean, that's how I feel for sure. But I mean, I agree that LSEC 5 as a whole does kind of work as this like even better closer to the whole project in a weird way. I mean, we kind of mentioned how like the whole project is just sort of hinting at the kind of lushness and the more ambient side of things, and that it like really just slowly takes over the course of this last LSEC, which I think is just like perfectly executed. You know, that being said, I thought it was sort of an interesting comment that made me think about, I don't know, what makes good ambient music, which for me is like, does it work both as background and in the foreground? You know what I mean? And I feel like LSEC 5 totally nails that because it does really work nicely in the background, just because it is so like kind of dreamy and lush and everything. But also if you zero in on it, there's so much going on. I mean, it's just interesting how so much of LSEC is like so skeletal and minimal, but this is just like I said, it's so dreamy. There's like so much to get lost in. You know what I mean? It seems to work on both sides.
Yeah, definitely. I think it does. And I think you're right. That is what makes good ambient music, you know, something that like can be background, but rewards deep listening. And, you know, LSEC 5 specifically, I think really does fall into that.
Would you describe it as soundtracky?
Not really, but you know, people always with instrumental music and ambient stuff, people always like kind of give it that moniker, soundtracky, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
And so I'll say it annoys me a little bit. So maybe that's why I'll say no, but it might just be me being biased.
Yeah, I get that. Steve also wrote in with this correction. He writes, as I understand it, power electronics is noise with harsh vocals. Some of LSEC may verge on harsh noise, but it's not power electronics. Maybe some folks use the terms interchangeably, though I recall that's a regular distinction made on Noise Extra, a noise podcast I occasionally listen to. I looked it up and I'll be damned, Steve is right. It's like, it's funny because you know, you and I, we've spent so much time like basically playing shows and attending shows in the sort of Central Florida noise scene. And, you know, we saw a lot of music that's like self-described power electronics. And like thinking back, you know, there was a lot of stuff that would have that kind of like screaming, harsh vocals mixed into it. You know what I mean? And I'm realizing now that maybe all the stuff that is that was described as power electronics did include the vocals. It's a shame because, so maybe what I mean more is like power noise, which is more of like an industrial kind of glitchy, like verging on harsh noise wall electronic music. But that term power electronics, I feel like it just like sums up the sound, like the feeling that I'm trying to describe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't know that. But yeah, most of my power electronics knowledge does come from, you know, having to sit through it at shows that I'm playing. Yeah, I didn't know that. But I do agree, the term power electronic, I mean, you know, you're singling out the electronics. That doesn't make me think of voice too much.
Yeah, and there's just something about, like, you know, like that, what's that, like, four-hour-long Pansonic record, Kesto? You know, like the really blasted noise stuff. I mean, it just makes me think of electronics, like, it makes me think of the electronic technology or whatever that's like malfunctioning or something to make that. And I just feel like power electronics sums it up. But it's just funny to sort of remember, like, when we were attending these shows and you see some harsh noise, you see some power electronics, you go back to harsh noise, you go to this, that. You know, it's not that different at the end of the day, minus the vocals, I guess.
We're going to piss a lot of people off.
Yeah. All right. But touche, touche. We'll call that power electronics gate.
There you go.
All right, what's next?
All right, listener Jordan says, you talked about LSEC 1 and 4 being the most fun, but I'm going to give LSEC 2 some love and say that it's a fun record also. The whole LSEC project has a very Outer Space 5, and on ELYC6 Onset, that vision is one of the strongest. It starts off calm, and on the second half gets more lively with the tempo picking up, and it creates such a strong sound world. There's a certain vision that I can kind of see. It's as if the piece started off relaxed somewhere in an intergalactic setting, where you're just passively watching things around you, and suddenly in the second half you're speeding up as if there's traveling through space at a high speed with the whooshing sounds adding to that action. The next track, Chimer, is danceable, percussive, and beat focused, which makes it a more fun track. It's a nice change from the previous track and works well for transitioning into the next track, C7B2, and that track is really fun. It's a track that you don't have to be patient with, because it's a jam.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering, I mean, if you could describe LSEC 2 as fun. And just thinking about this question, you know, got me thinking, because I just feel like not a lot of people would call LSEC 2 fun. I mean, it's got the reputation for being the most like experimental LSEC, the hardest to get through, the most like electroacoustic indebted LSEC. And I don't know, just got me thinking about, you know how we talked about how XI is almost like the most brilliant part about it is this perfect balance it strikes between the experimental side and the like pure hip hop groove side of Autechre, you know, like the academics and the B-boys are like both present on every track. And I started wondering if like maybe part of what is just slightly disappointing to me about LSEC is that it is no longer really striking that balance. Because for me, I feel like, LSEC Onset is almost like pure academic territory totally, and then Chimer is like the groove, and then we're back to pure academic with CSET. You know what I mean? It's like there are a few tracks that are kind of doing both at the same time.
Yeah, it you're right. You know, XI really like struck that balance. I think on X or LSEC, you're right, like the balance is throughout like different song, you know, like you said, like one song will be academic, you know, one will be you know, beat oriented. It's no longer like part of the same piece, you know, like I think it sometimes is on XI. So yeah, I don't know if I would call LSEC 2 you know, fun. I definitely don't think it's the most fun of the set, but I guess depends on your definition of fun.
Yeah, I mean, and I think like Jordan's descriptions here are really really good. I could sort of like hear how he's hearing it. That's why I made you read that whole super long thing. But here's more from listener Jordan. It says, on the topic of some Autechre tracks being funny, there's definitely some of that in LSEC too. The funny sounding squeaky synth pattern that kicks in the second half of LX6 onset, going up and down, and the funny beeping going on throughout until it gets even more ridiculous at the end where it's just utter tomfoolery that sounds like retro video game sound effects. It's like when you go to the sound test in a video game and you just keep playing random sound effects. Keimer 151 has that screeching synth sound, which is kind of funny because it sounds like screaming. It has a ridiculously cartoonish vibe to it. I'm not sure we talked about this on the episode, but does LSEC have any of that sense of humor, you know, that we sometimes like notice popping up on other releases?
I mean, I think the listener's right. There are like some sounds I would describe as, you know, video game-ish and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, definitely like some things that are kind of funny sounding. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there's some humor to it. I don't really think there's as much as, you know, maybe years past or, you know, records past that we've talked about. But, you know, I don't think it's devoid of humor or anything.
Yeah, I just, you know, think about like fun and humor. I was just sort of realizing that, you know, there's something about LSEC that seems quite serious, actually.
I think
quite academic for the most part, you know?
I mean, I think when you have 4 hours of basically anything, you know, it's going to turn academic and maybe lose some humor, you know? I think there's a reason, you know, most comedies are shorter films and stuff, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I just know that, like, you know, it seems like Autechre does lose a lot of people. I mean, they gain new people in this period, but they lose a lot of people too. And I feel like the people they're losing are the people that are kind of turned off by like the seriousness and the like intense experimentalism, you know, of this of releases like LSEC. And I just feel like, you know, to me, I like both. Look, I'm like one of those lucky people. All right, what's next?
All right, last comment from listener Jordan. About the album versus film thing, I completely disagree with Dan's take. You're wrong already. An album can be like a movie where there's a clear destination, but not always. An album is typically more like an episodic TV show where many songs might share a certain vibe, sound palette, theme, or mood, just like how an episodic television show might have the same setting and characters, but no deeper plot. Or an album can be like an anthology series where each song's its own thing. Many pop and hip-hop records are like this. I think of LSEC like a drama series where each part is another episode, and LSEC 5 is a conclusion that closes with Oneium.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is that I don't know if I could like stick with the episodic TV analogy, but I get what he's saying, which is that like you wouldn't have to listen to, you know, you wouldn't have to see every episode to like understand, you know what I mean? You could sort of skip around. But I feel like in the music world, there can be stuff that doesn't have to like flow start to finish, but still all the pieces need to speak to each other. You know, like I feel like there are a lot of albums that they're not like, you know, like building towards some clear destination, but stuff is playing off of each other and complementing each other and even like discording with each other and stuff like that. And it should all like build to some bigger whole. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I also, my other analogy is, you know, like a painting or something, you know, I think of it more as like a piece of art, which I guess television can be, but you know, that's a different podcast. You know, yeah. It's like, you're right. You know, you can enjoy some, you know, in individual parts of it. You can not enjoy some others. I think he's definitely right. You know, that there's certain genres and stuff, you know, like pop that really, you know, are sort of that episodic TV show. You know, you can like, you know, one Cardi B song and you don't necessarily have to like the whole album or something, you know.
Right.
And I think that's fair. But I think things like, you know, Autechre, or things that we're looking at like academically, I feel like that's a big part of it, you know, for me. You know, not everything has to be like, you know, a concept album, you know, the Wall or some shit, you know.
Right.
It just like it has to build to like something, you know, like the sum of the parts like should equal a greater whole, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like
it's not like a TV show. Like a TV show, I mean, generally doesn't get all dumped on you at once. And
no, exactly.
If it was, then every episode better have a reason for being there, or else you should have left it. You know, you should have cut it. This is like one big thing that all comes out at once. And so, you know, I think everything needs to belong there. Like, you know what I mean? So you don't have to listen to it in order or whatever. You can do whatever you want with it. You can have your favorites and all that stuff, but it's like, it still needs to create a larger piece, a bigger experience than you get on the individual song level for me. And I feel like Elsek does that. In fact, I feel like Elsek, we talked about, surprisingly, works in a start to finish experience, weirdly.
Yeah, I mean, I think we determine that it works, you know, best in that way. And, you know, piecing it out doesn't work as well. I mean, that's why we decided to do all five, you know, in one episode rather than split it or anything. Yeah.
Well, here's a related comment from listener Choco Turnips, who calls Elsek his favorite Autechre album and writes, "I think Elsek shows 21 of Autechre's most brilliant tracks to date and really seems to come off as Autechre just having fun with what they're doing, just releasing a mass of what sounds like loosely edited, if edited at all, jam sessions. I like how you can tell they still tried to arrange it like a proper album, what with how it progressively goes from its most chaotic and ridiculous tracks to material that almost sounds like Autechre revisiting the styles and themes of their earliest work in a very fresh, refined, and creative way." You know, I meant to bring this up on the episode and totally forgot, but do you think that Elsek is kind of similar to EP7 in that it was supposed to sort of reject, you know, traditional album requirements, but they just couldn't resist sequencing it into a larger statement? In fact, we talked about that on the EP7 episode, the quote from Sean where he's like, you know, we called it an EP because we didn't want to have to like play by album rules. And then we talked about how they couldn't resist still making it like a big sequence, like a big statement in a weird way, a full experience. And they are talking about that in the context of Elsek. Like, that's from an interview about Elsek, you know? So, like, does it seem like a similar thing? You know, it was just supposed to be a big data dump, but they couldn't resist, like, piecing it together in some creative way?
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, they seem like people who obviously, you know, care about their you know, art and stuff, and so I don't think that they would just dump things out, you know, because even you know, some of the big, you know, quad range and everything, it still is like sequenced well, and I think Elsek is definitely sequenced you know, very well. I don't think that they're, you know, lazy enough really to just say do whatever, you know, put it on shuffle, you know, here's just all the files, you know, have at it. I feel like if you're gonna do that, you know, just stick the albums, the tracks in alphabetical order or something, you know?
Yeah. Give like some signal that you're supposed to just mix it up.
Yeah. That is up to you.
Yeah. But it does feel like really to me, like that explains like the weird, cause we talked about how weird it is. Like why is it like in these perfectly, not quite perfectly, but like, you know, 45 to 50 minute chunks, you know, and sometimes they don't really even make sense as a chunk. Don't build to like some satisfying part, you know, individual part. And I kind of feel like they just wanted to like release all this stuff. They selected like the batch of stuff they wanted to release. And some of those included like huge, almost 30 minute songs. And then they like couldn't resist sequencing it into like a digestible kind of experience with some logic to it. And that was almost like to the detriment of some parts of the album, because, you know, like we said, it's kind of beautifully sequenced from start to finish, but on the individual Elsek level,
yeah,
it's sometimes pretty weird.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about during the episode, you know, it works much better, I think, as a complete piece. And so it is like sort of weird that they, you know, broke it up to the, you know, one through five, but you know, maybe it was just not fully wanting to commit to a, you know, 4-hour record, or you know, not even wanting to scare people out of listening to it or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I just feel like the idea started as like, we don't have to follow the rules of an album. And then it was like this big mess of tracks. And they were like, you know what? It would probably work if we,
yeah, some of the did. Rules are yeah. worthwhile. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What's next?
Yeah. Listener Joe shared some info after our Elsek info or episode. He writes, "I'm glad to hear that you liked my art gallery museum analogy. One interesting thing I wanted to point out, Dan mentioned that Elsek 1 sounds like the part you'd listen to in the lobby while buying tickets. And for a long time, it was actually the only one you could listen to on Spotify. It seemed like it was exactly intended as that, a sort of taste of what the rest of the project sounds like to try to get you interested in buying tickets. hits for the rest of the album.
That's pretty crazy, isn't it? Do you remember that? Because I like just vaguely do, but I was kind of like a late switch over to streaming, you know? But do you remember that?
I was also, you know, sort of a late switch over to streaming, so I don't 100% remember it, but I mean, just further proving how much of a genius I am.
I know, but it's like, it's really the only LSEC that you could do that with, because if you put any of the other ones on, you would get like a really wrong idea about what the whole thing is like. Only LSEC one works as like kind of the sampler play. I just thought that was really kind of mind-blowing. Joe also noted that, quote, Dan speculated over whether NTS was ever pressed on CD, and it was indeed, and has sold out long ago, whereas the individual session vinyls are still available to purchase almost 2 years later. So, the more you know.
Yeah, well, good.
But not good, because you can't buy it. Wanted to read this from Joe, who says, in regard to NTS, would you guys consider taking a longer break before the episode like you did for Christmas, so that both you and all of us have a bit more time to listen through it all again a few times to prepare ahead of time? I know this would be grueling for you two, but I would personally love it if you took some extra time ahead of the episodes, maybe even extra week or two, and then did a massive mega episode all at once in the same spirit of the album itself. I kind of just wanted to bring this up so that we can talk about how we are going to tackle NTS. I mean, we're going to do the first two on one episode next week. So you've got like one more week to, you know, get prepared for that. And then we're going to do another episode 2 weeks after that of the last two. I mean, I feel like that is as far as we can stretch it without, like, I mean, that's like spending a month on NTS. And for anybody who you know, the NTS era is not their favorite era of Odd-Tekker, it's like, I feel bad for making them sit with it for, you know, a month of Gauntcast episodes on it. But I feel like that's the best we can do at balancing, like, giving everybody enough time to fully digest it, but not talk, you know, droning on too long about it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you don't have to listen to it right when it comes out. You know, if you want to take some time, you know, true, it'll be there when you're ready. But I mean, we did in an old podcast that we used to do, we actually covered NTS all in one, like, 1 hour episode before. Yeah. So it can be done. We've done it.
Yeah. I mean, when it first came out, yeah, we like did this on our previous podcast. It was kind of like the first testing ground of this podcast because we had so much fun just, you know, gushing about it.
Yeah.
but so we want to kind of do it a little different so that we can actually go into like more detail than we ever have before with it. But you know, I guess I'll just say, I believe in you guys. You guys can do it. 2 weeks per two NTSs. You could do it. Joe also writes, once you are done going through the discography and covering the other aspects that you wanted to cover, is there any chance you would consider continuing the podcast indefinitely? Even if it just came out monthly or even only a few times a year, I think people would still massively appreciate having it to look forward to. Like you've mentioned many times, there's endless amounts of things to talk about and discuss. Best transitions between songs, best beats, artists inspired by Odd-Tekker, their influences, song titles, ridiculous fan theories, etc. I totally understand if you want to end this after a while and move on to other projects, but you guys really are doing a great service to the AE fan community and creating something that could be enjoyed by people years later. First off, thank you for saying that. I mean, that's all we want to get out of this, really, is like, if you know, if people enjoy listening to it, that's awesome. I feel like this is something that I would have liked to listen to, but it didn't exist, and so we just, like, you know, buckled up and made it. So that's always nice to hear. You know, as far as what we're gonna do next, I mean, we're probably going to milk it, right? We're going to go, we're going to talk about some of those interesting, like, well, once we're done with the discography, we'll do some of those weird ideas. I think that would be really fun.
Yeah, I'm definitely all for milking it. You know, this is a lot of fun. I really do, like, enjoy, you know, like, Odd-Tekker, like, it's a niche of enough of a band that, you know, it's got a small fan base, but there's enough people that, you know, care, you know, enough to listen to a podcast and stuff. You know, I have a lot of fun. Like, I do a good amount of our Twittering, and you know, I have fun just like chatting with people on there about stuff. And you know, the email, you know, I like doing these email episodes. It just, like, it really is like a fun you know, little community kind of thing, because Odd-Tekker is also the sort of thing, like, I don't know anybody in real life except for you that likes right, Odd-Tekker, right. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, it's cool to have, like, your little interest, you know, and get to talk to, you know, other people that have that same, you know, crazy interest.
Yeah, and I mean, on that note, I think that's what we're going to be thinking about, is, like, how long would it actually be fun for people to listen to? Like, that's how long we'll milk it. you know, and I've kind of like had in the back of my mind, like, okay, maybe once we've like fully gone through Autechre and said everything that is fun to say about him, you know, will we move on to another artist or something? And that creates challenges all its own, because I would want it to be something that like Autechre fans like also like, but somebody who has like, nobody quite has that kind of like level of consistency where every release is at least interesting, you know, like usually great, but also interesting, even if it's not great, you know?
Yeah. Cause that's the thing, you know, we've done other, you know, podcasts, with just like random albums and stuff. And it's like, it kind of sucks when you like have to listen to an album you don't enjoy, you know, yeah. for 2 weeks or, you know, tons, like when you have to like study a record you don't enjoy, it can be kind of a pain in the ass. Sometimes it's fun, you know, but you know, it could, at least with this odd, like there's been no time during this whole show where I've, you know, not looked forward to going to the next record, or right. You know, like it's always like I'm always in, even, you know, the records I, you know, put it towards the bottom of my list and stuff, like I still enjoy listening to, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of wanted to bring that up because like, if you guys, the listeners, have ideas of like, what's another artist that you love and you think all Autechre fans love and they have an interesting discography, you know, worth taking a deep look at, email us, and give us a heads up, goncastpod@gmail.com. The other wrinkle to that is both Dan and I have to find them interesting. So it's like not miserable for one of us and like pleasurable for the other one. But yeah, do send in your thoughts. All right, what's the next one? This is a pretty long one. You can pass it off to me if you get tired of reading.
All right, I'll see if I can make it. One more from listener Joe says, I almost fell out of my chair when, after hinting throughout the entire podcast at how much you love Elsec and then spending 2 solid hours fanboying over it, neither of you ranked it in your top 3, not even in the top 5 in Dan's case. This gets at something I think you should clear up in the next bonus episode. How exactly do your rankings work? What do they actually mean? My friend and I always have 2 separate sets of rankings for music. One set is where we rank albums according to how objectively good we think they are, and the other set is where we rank our personal favorites. I figured that your rankings were more about what you personally enjoy, since Dan admitted that Untilted was well done but ranked it lower because he just didn't enjoy the aesthetic. Maybe I misunderstood something, and what you were saying at the end was that you didn't enjoy Elsec as much as you thought you did anymore, but the sense I got going into the episode is that it has always been one of your go-to albums, and it didn't seem like much had changed up until the very end. I know that rankings are always going to be tricky and can't be done in any truly objective way, but can you clarify what consideration goes into your rankings? I did it.
Yeah, and I cut something else out that I wanted to leave in because you would have appreciated, but he used like the example of Bob Dylan. You know, Dan's like the big Bob Dylan fanatic, but just as sort of like New Morning is like high on his list, but he knows it's not objectively like one of the highest Dylan, you know, records and stuff like that. Totally get what he means. I mean, as far as how we are doing our rankings, I feel like it is pretty, we just sort of like recognize how silly rankings are, you know, like sometimes listeners will write to us and say stuff like, they disagree with ranking like on principle, but they thought they'd give it a try because, you know, we've been giving it a try and stuff. And I don't know, I just totally sympathize with that it's like, it's totally silly. But I guess what I'm trying to capture with my rankings is like a kind of definitive list for me. Like if I had to, you know, eliminate one Autechre album from existence, whichever one I would pick, that is my least favorite, you know, my lowest ranked. And then I do it again until I get all the way up to number one. You know what I mean? but I'm acknowledging, I think, that this is Gabe in the year 2020 and 2021. And my opinions will almost certainly change. You know what I mean?
Yeah, pretty much exactly how I feel. You know, I realize that ranking is inherently, you know, kind of silly. But I enjoy doing it. I like, you know, making lists at the end of the year each year. You know, it's just sort of like a snapshot of that time, you know, in your life or something, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, my ranking, the way I've been doing it is 100%, you know, just my own, you know, opinion. I mean, like I said, you know, I've put some records lower, just, you know, I can appreciate them. They're just maybe not the, like you said, you know, if I had to get rid of some, like,
yeah, like a personal desert island discs kind of an exercise.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's sort of the, you know, list I would you know, order I would get rid of them in or something. I guess to answer his questions about LSEC is, yeah, I think I did like think I enjoyed it maybe a little more. Like I was a little surprised with myself that it didn't make it to the top, and maybe it's just right now that's the way I feel or something. But you know, I did sort of like expect myself. I wish like before we had done the podcast, we had like just do a ranking, you know, before listening to any of the album, because it had been a while since I had listened to a few of them. So I sort of wish we had done that, but you know, too late now. You know, so I sort of like thought I would have put it higher, but you know, in revisiting, you know, Tri Repete and Chiastic Slide and stuff, like I realized like I do sort of, you know, like if I had to only listen to one, you know, for the rest of my life or something, I think I would kind of stick with Tri Repete or something, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess we should say too, like our rankings aren't like, I don't think we've really switched anything around, but they're not set in stone. You know, we could change something week to week, but you know, I purposely like don't really go back and listen to the, you know, I focus just on the record we're doing. So
yeah, and we are gonna like, you know, the plan is to kind of do a revisit, like summing everything up and like maybe revisit some things and make some changes and like kind of come out with our quote unquote definitive list.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as far as LSEC goes, I thought that it could be number one when we were going into it, because it has that quality we talked about in the episode where it's like this kind of thing that you're totally impressed by, but you never feel like you fully have grasped it, you know, because there's just too much to grasp. And so it had that kind of mystique for me, and then spending so much concentrated time with it, you know, I just realized that it is, like, by definition, a mixed bag, and it excels at being a mixed bag with, like, these incredibly high highs and, like, these kind of weird, you know, just nooks and crannies that sometimes I don't even know what to do but just, like, throw my hands up, but I kind of delight in that whole process as well. But it's just, like, you know, the albums that I have higher than it are ones that are, like, for me, just killing on every single second of it, you know, and LSEC is just not that. So, you know, maybe it's not that, like, I mean, we'll obviously get to talk about NTS pretty soon here, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it's like that also has the mixed bag quality, but to me it's kind of like killing it at a much higher ratio is all I'll say for now. All right, last one from listener Tom, who says, I'm sure you've addressed this topic here and there, but in soaking in Sign and Plus lately, I've read a few reviews and discussions where inevitably someone pines for the good old days of Amber. Can we collectively knock this shit off? One generally wouldn't expect a Michelin star chef to make a grilled cheese. Not that they couldn't, not that their version of it wouldn't blow your damn mind, but once a broader world of ingredients and cookware and techniques are at their disposal, they ain't making a fucking grilled cheese for you and your palate. Tom also adds, it's been over 25 years since Amber, and I've listened to it loads since the 90s, and I don't care if it's their best stuff by some shitball yardstick. For a group making music this weird to still be around and dumping so much music out there, it's ridiculous that there's a chorus of, well, I prefer their early stuff. Every single damn time they put something out. Move on. If one likes the stuff from 94 better, that's then what followed, then fucking have at it, but please try to do so without yammering about it any chance you get. You know, I sympathize, but I feel like I'm like so deep into it that I don't, you know, like I spend so much time like on these like dedicated forums and things where nobody would say their early stuff is better. You know, nobody would have that kind of like casual attitude about it, you know, so I just am not as annoyed by this.
Yeah. Same kind of thing. Like our Twitter account and Reddit and stuff is so entranced, like in deeply in the community, that yeah, people don't say this as much, but I do definitely sympathize with him. It is annoying. I mean, not even with Oddtecker, but any band, you know, it's just if you like the early stuff, it exists still. Go listen to it, you know. Like you don't have to listen to, you know, just because a band, you know, releases a bad album or something, like just don't listen to that one. Or, you know, if you don't like anything past, you know, this year, don't fucking listen to it, you know. Like I do, you know, I could see being like disappointed, you know, when a band, you know, starts sucking, you know. Like I like Modest Mouse, but I think they've sucked for quite a while now. But here's the thing. I don't listen to anything after Good News, you know? Because it
sucks.
But
I mean, like, at the same time, you know, I get the disappointment, like you were saying, in that. And I also get, like, because when I put on early Oddtecker, like Amber or something, it gives me this, like, weird, warm, like nostalgic feeling. And it's not just for the record before like that whole era, you know, everything mm-hmm. about the 90s electronic music. And it gives you like this weird feeling that, I don't know, it's going to sound stupid and obvious, but you know, like when you watch an old movie or something, you see like young Harrison Ford, for example, and you're like, God, he was so fucking cool. And you like wish he could somehow be made young again and make more movies as him. Because like every, you know, couple of years or somebody is like called like the next Harrison Ford or something, but nobody's ever going to be Harrison Ford. And Harrison Ford is never going to be Harrison Ford again. No matter how good the stuff he does, there's just something about like that early era that is like so, I don't know, warm and nostalgic or something. And I get the disappointment that it's never coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good analogy, you know. But the difference is, you know, Harrison Ford's making Indiana Jones 5, and it sucks. And Otticker's making, you know, making something different that's still good, you know.
So that makes people feel like, why couldn't they just go back to it? Because they think, like, it's more of a possibility, you know what I mean? Because, like, they seem so talented.
Yeah, it's not like, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's not like, you know, Weezer or something where they just have lost it, you know? I get that, but I think it's just, I think that's more of a reason for Otticker not to go back. You know, if Otticker mm-hmm. released an album that sounded a lot like Amber, you know, tomorrow, I'd be disappointed, you know, because mm-hmm. why take that step back? You know, if it was, you know, some sort of like, oh, you know, undiscovered, you know, unreleased, you know, thing that we're, you know, releasing now, you know, recorded back then, like, okay, fine, I'd love to have that, but it, a newly like recorded thing today that sounded like something old, that's not really what I want Otticker for, you know. I like the experimentation and the, like, you know, constant moving forward that you get, you know. None of these records, you know, that we've talked about, like, really sound exactly like the one before it or the one after it or anything like that. You know, they're all sort of, you know, you could tell they're from the same artists, maybe, but, you know, they don't sound the same. And I think that, you know, that's what makes it so interesting to go through these, you know, so many records.
Yeah, because there would just be, like, lesser Ambers or something, basically.
No, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing.
Tom also writes, if that wasn't inflammatory enough, here's a hot take. Huge Chrome Cylinder Box Unfolding by Venetian Snares is the best non-AE but kind of sounds like it could be album anyone else has ever produced. And it's better than Amber, but not Confield. How's about that? I know that you're big into Venetian Snares. I have only listened like a fraction of his pretty overwhelming discography. And I threw this one on, Huge Chrome Cylinder Box Unfolding, after reading this email. I got to say, it sounded awesome to me. Maybe probably not better than Amber, but sounded pretty good. I mean, do you know this one? What do you think of it?
It's definitely not better than Amber. I'll say that. But yeah, this is a good you know, record. Venetian Snares, I am a fan. He does have like a shit ton of records, and you know, they vary in quality. I also feel like a lot of, you know, his more breakcore stuff, you got to be in the mood for something so like frantic and all. This record, Huge Chrome Cylinder Box Unfolding, it is a little more like glitchy and stuff, and it maybe a little easier listening and stuff. So it definitely is like a highlight from his. I love songs about my cats, but this is one of, you know, probably top five of his for me.
Yeah. So thank you, Tom, for the rec, and another entirely too long listener email episode in the books.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you've got any Otticker opinions or hot takes you want to share, we want to hear them. Gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next episode in a week, NTS Sessions 1 and 2, with the other two coming after that. Again, send us your thoughts, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up on YouTube, stay connected, Twitter, Instagram. Both of those are @gonkcastpod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.